Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hello, welcome to a brand new episode of Germany in Focus, a podcast made possible by members of The Local. Today, we'll tell you the exact dates of when Germany's new citizenship law will come into force after it finally passed the last hurdle, and we'll tell you how the citizenship test is changing. We'll talk about some changes happening in Germany this April, including to Elterngeld, or parental allowance. Cannabis is going to be legalized in Germany in just a couple of days, at least partially. We'll give you an update on that and explain some weed-related German vocabulary. The Zone of Interest, a Holocaust-era film based on the Commandant of Auschwitz, recently won an Oscar. We'll tell you what we thought about it and talk about remembrance culture in Germany. I'm Rachel Oxen, and I'm in Berlin today with the lovely journalists Rachel Stern and Imogen Goodman. And we'll also hear from our special guest, historian and tour guide Johnny Whitlam. Hey, how are you both?
Hi.
Hi, Rach. I'm doing well.
I'm also doing well. It's really impossible not to feel good when the weather is like it is. I'm feeling a bit drunk on it, to be honest. It's just wonderful.
Yeah, we've seen some signs of spring, people walking down the street with their ice cream cone. Some people said hi to me, which only happens when there's spectacularly sunny weather in Germany.
Yeah, that's so true. On the way here, I saw cherry blossom trees in full bloom, and I saw shops selling watermelons.
Oh, wow, that's below. I think that's skipping a few steps, but I'm not gonna hate on it. It's whatever it takes to get into that happy spring mood. Yeah, I'm here for it.
Johnny, it's wonderful to have you here. You are our first in-person outside guest to come to the booth. How's it going?
It's quite small in here.
Yeah.
But otherwise, it's good. It's quite a warm day. Almost up to 20 for the first time this year, I think. So, you know, spring has sprung. It's hard to be in a bad mood on a day like this.
Absolutely. Can you tell us a bit about yourself, Johnny, what you do in Berlin and how you got into it?
Yeah, I'm a tour guide, which often meets this reaction of like, oh, because I think it's quite a low status thing. I was 21 and a company needed someone who would work December 25th and January 1st. And I was like, I need a job. I'm a egocentric loudmouth. So let's do this. And I'd only been living in Berlin, 24 hours.
Really?
Yeah, when I did the interview that the interviewer had forgotten about. So he wasn't allowed to go to lunch with his colleagues. He had to talk to me. And yeah, that was thankfully in 2010. So I have had a bit more than 24 hours to learn the history of the city. Mm-hmm. And I've been doing it in some form ever since. But within the last just about a year, I started being a loudmouth, not just on the streets, but on social media. And I've kind of gained a little bit of a following, which is weird. It's very nice. I'm very thankful, but it's a little odd at the same time.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite part of the job?
No. And that's why I've ended up setting up my own thing, because I was a manager for a long time. So I did a lot of the back end stuff. Like, I love photography. I like obviously making videos. I like getting this stuff online. I love spreadsheets. Oh, look how organized that is. Alternating colors, yes.
Are you German, by the way? Do you have German citizenship?
I have German citizenship, but I don't have any German family. I'm a naturalized citizen. So I like doing all of that stuff that you need to get a business running. I like kind of running a business. I like booking other guides, tours, organizing that. But I also like doing the tours and reading the history. That's probably the best bit is like, actually the best bit at the moment, I can tell you what my favorite bit is now. Yesterday, weather's good. I get on my bike and I just was like, oh, I'll just shoot 3 or 4 videos today. No one pays me for that necessarily, but that's also how I find how my customers find me through these videos. And so I was like, damn, this is great. Can't believe this is my job.
That is so cool. And you're originally from England, is
yes.
that right?
Yeah. Yeah, from Nottingham.
Yeah. Yeah. When did you naturalize as German?
Oh, November 2018. I'd lived here for 8 years and 2 weeks. So it was Yeah. 8 years is the minimum, right? So I got right in there, but also got lucky. At that time, they were pushing Brexit people to the front. So that's like a nice little bit of privilege that I got to enjoy and I'm very thankful for. So it's like almost, God, that's more than 5 years ago.
Johnny, what is your favorite way to spend a Sunday in Berlin?
People who know me are like, they're laughing at me. I don't like German Sundays. I don't get it. This is divisive. If you want to ever get engagement on social media, say that you don't understand German Sundays. I didn't realize it was such a topic. As a self-employed person, Sunday, worst day of the week, because you just have fewer things you can do. So yeah, not the answer you were looking for, just me moaning.
So you're extremely unhappy on a Sunday because all the shops are shut. So you never enjoy Sunday.
Yeah, like when I did work a 9-to-5, I was like one of those people who say is tired on Saturday and wants to enjoy Saturday. And then I wanted to get stuff done on Sunday and you're not allowed.
Yeah.
So I don't quite get that because there's like the way I see it is there's a dude who's like, hey, I'll sell you something. And I'm like, cool, I'll buy it. And then there's a person who's like, this is bad for both of you. And you're like, okay, could you go away? And, you know, I'd like to buy this lettuce or whatever. And so I don't know. It just feels like weirdly chill out and leave me alone. Like, yeah. But anyway, I'm self-employed now. So woo, sometimes I take Tuesday off. Me and the pensioners.
Yeah.
That's what happens if I'm out shooting videos. I'm there talking to myself and elderly people are like, what are you doing? Always in a nice way. Always. But yeah, that's a completely non-Sunday answer for you.
Love it. We're always here for the different opinions and outlooks on German life.
RIP, my mentions. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Shawnee. We'll hear from you again a little later in the episode. And a little public service announcement. The clocks go forward in Germany in the middle of the night from Saturday into Sunday. That's March 31st. So sadly, you will probably wake up on Sunday a little bit tired because you've lost an hour of sleep. Let's get into some stories then. Foreigners in Germany have been waiting weeks and weeks for this news to come, but on Tuesday it was confirmed. President Frank-Walter Steinmeier has signed off on the citizenship reform, meaning that it can officially be written into the law books. A pretty historic moment, really. Imogen, what's the reaction been?
Yeah, the response has been amazing. It really feels like people are finally able to just breathe out again because they've all been holding their breath, waiting for this last step to finally pass, not quite able to believe that this will actually become a reality. But as you mentioned, it is coming. It's been 7 weeks since the bill was passed by the Bundesrat, but the president finally signed off on it on March 26th. So unfortunately, we still don't know why it took so long, but the main thing is it's done. And this reform is definitely going to come this year. So we spoke to a few migrant groups and foreigners to get their perspective on this. And all of them just really emphasized how happy they were to no longer have to choose between their two identities and give up their old nationalities when becoming German. A lot of groups we spoke to really described the bill as this really important message that Germany is now shifting into this modern pro-migration society and country, which I think is so important for many people from the international community here. On the other hand, I do have to say there are still some pretty major concerns about how this bill will be implemented. So obviously we've seen in Berlin and places like Stuttgart just how large these backlogs can be at the immigration offices. So I think there's a big hope there that the authorities will get their act together before this bill comes in, really be able to implement it effectively and process these applications fast, even with this massive influx of applications, which they are expecting.
Yeah, I saw that a few people were talking about how worried they are.
Absolutely, I know. I mean, it's good news, but the mind automatically goes to these fax machines and paper applications around the country. And they think, well, modern country in some ways, maybe not in others. So we'll see how that goes.
What are the dates that people need to know, Imogen?
Well, I'll say there's one that everyone has to have in their head, and that is June 26th, which is now the official date of implementation.
This year?
This year, amazingly. So height of summer, that's when we'll see all of this become a reality. And just to clarify, that does mean that any applications that are processed after this date, so even if you submit before, will be processed according to the new rules. So that means you'll be able to keep your existing passport, for example, provided your home country also allows that, if your application is accepted after that date, June 26th.
Really, really good to know. We also heard this week that the citizenship test, which most people have to do when they are naturalizing in Germany, is changing quite dramatically. Some additional questions are going to be added. Why is this and what can people expect?
This is, really interesting, as Germany doesn't really tend to shake up its citizenship test very often. But we did hear the other day from a report in Spiegel that the Interior Ministry is planning to add 12 new questions to the test that will all be related to Germany's relationship with Israel, with the Jewish community in Germany, and the issue of anti-Semitism. So, for example, some of the questions that we've seen include knowing how Holocaust denial is punished, for example, in Germany, or, for instance, how long Jewish people have been present in what is now known as Germany. Or, for instance, you might get asked a little bit about the founding of Israel, when that was and how that happened. Mm-hmm. Of course, it does seem that the government is very keen to send a message here that despite getting rid of some of these barriers to naturalization, there is a specific type of person who should not be allowed to naturalize, and racists, anti-Semites, they've been very, very clear about that. So as we've discussed before, this has a lot to do with the current conflict in Gaza and the real polarization with regard to the Israel-Palestine debate.
Mm-hmm. And Holocaust denial is punished with imprisonment or a fine in Germany, right?
That's absolutely right. So up to 5 years in prison, or what's known as a Geldstrafe, so a fine.
Do we know when this is changing?
Not yet, but we do think it will be pretty soon. The Interior Ministry is working on a new ordinance, which will officially add these new questions to the roster. Just to clarify, there are soon going to be 322 of these questions in total that they can pick to use in the citizenship test. So there are 312 with the new 12, which relate to Germany more generally, and 10 related to your home state. But even though there are hundreds of questions they can pick from, only 33 of these will be used in the test that you actually take. And you only have to get 17 of these right. So don't panic if you're thinking, how am I going to learn all of those?
That is a lot.
It is quite a lot to memorize, absolutely.
Thank you so much for that update, Imogen. Of course, we will include the links to the stories that we've been talking about there in the show notes. Okay, so we're going into a new month. It's already April on Easter Monday. That is a public holiday in Germany, so we're starting off strong, guys. Rachel, can you tell us about some of the changes happening this month?
Yeah, Rach. So one of the big changes is that to Elterngeld, or parental allowance. So previously, the threshold for receiving Elterngeld was capped at 300,000 euros in taxable income for couples. But because Germany has wanted to reduce its 2024 budget, that was lowered a little bit. So now it's going to be 200,000 euros of taxable income starting on April 1st for both couples and single parents. And that is going to drop even further to 175,000 euros next year. But as of April 1st, the threshold is basically being reduced by 100,000. And just to clarify what parental allowance is, it's the money that parents receive when they go on Elternzeit, or parental leave. So it's a quite complicated system where you can take up to 3 years of leave, even while working part-time. But you can only, as a couple, receive Elterngeld for up to 14 months of that time, or as a single person or one parent, up to 12 months.
Okay, really good to know. So yeah, you would have to really look at what money you're bringing in as a couple or a single parent and see if anything is changing for you.
Yeah, and one big factor is this is taxable income. So there are, of course, sometimes tens of thousands of euros which are not taxed for whatever reason. So it's definitely worth looking into if you could qualify or not.
Got it. Are there any other interesting changes this month?
Yeah, right. So one really notable change is that starting on April 1st, the VAT on gas and district heating is going to be increased from the reduced rate of 7% back to the original rate of 19%. And in Germany, the rate was temporarily reduced as part of a comprehensive relief package to ease the financial burden on people living here, because not surprisingly, after Russia's invasion of Ukraine in February 2022, the cost really skyrocketed. And so the government later that year passed a comprehensive measure to, at least for about a year and a half, really lower that cost. And so concretely, this means that a family with a gas consumption of maybe 20,000 kilowatt hours would have an additional cost of 220 euros per year going forward. And a single person who has a consumption of, say, just 5,000 kilowatt hours would have to pay 52 euros more, according to the energy comparison portal Verifox. And so whatever your situation is, you can be sure that you'll be paying a little bit more for your electricity and heating cost.
Not so good news, but really good to know, so we can keep an eye on that. And Rachel, what is this about qualifications allowance that we were talking about just before we recorded? I'd love to hear more about that.
So this is one positive financial change coming from the government. Basically, Germany set aside 3.3 billion euros to help companies whose employees are impacted by structural changes. And so this Qualifizierungsgeld, or qualification allowance, basically is to go to companies who have faced major changes due to AI, the transition to clean energy, automation, and more. And employers have to apply for it in order to pay for the cost of training for their employees. And even though that officially goes into effect on April 1st, any employers who are listening to this podcast on Friday can already start applying.
Really good to know. Thanks for that, Rachel. And we will, of course, include a link to our article with the full rundown of changes in April in the show notes. Another big thing about April, we've got a theme this episode, I believe, which we just found out last week, is that cannabis possession is going to be legal in Germany. The Bundesrat, which represents the German states, approved the law with a majority, even though there was quite a lot of criticism and pushback, especially from the opposition Christian Democrats and Christian Social Union. That was quite a surprise, actually, that it wasn't delayed in some way. We didn't really expect that. We thought they'd delay it. So Imogen, what does this mean exactly? From April 1st, what can you do legally in Germany?
So the main big change for most people from April is that they will legally be allowed to grow up to 3 cannabis plants at home and keep up to 50 grams of cannabis within their own 4 walls, provided it's for personal use. So that's quite a big change. You can have your own little sort of cannabis garden, again, provided it is only for you and not to sell on. Meanwhile, if you're out in public, you can now legally, or at least from April 1st, carry up to 25 grams of cannabis with you. But of course, you will need to make sure you're not lighting up near schools or other protected areas, because that will still be an offence.
Yeah, makes sense, I guess.
Makes absolute sense. So this may all seem pretty sudden. I think, yeah, it seems like it's now racing towards us after months of delay. And it's basically a product of how much opposition this bill faced and how many times it has been.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Held up. As you say, though, due to some very complicated mathematics in the Bundesrat, the state coalitions weren't quite able to torpedo the bill as they wanted to. So we've got the situation where it suddenly passed. And then a few days later, we're now going to have this legalized cannabis situation. So really, really quite an incredible situation there. You may be remembering another part of the bill that we've talked about before, and that was the social clubs. So that's not coming just yet. That will come at the start of July, though it sort of remains to be seen how many of these clubs will be ready by then. Just as a reminder, these were the clubs where you can become a member of them and you can buy cannabis from a sort of very private cultivation space that should be pure and regulated.
Really interesting. I saw Finance Minister Christian Lindner had tweeted, "So, Bubat's bald legal," or "Weed soon legal," with a broccoli emoji.
Mm-hmm. He's very down with the kids.
Yes, it's a,
what a cool guy.
Such a cool guy. So Bubat is a slang word for cannabis or marijuana in Germany. I don't know if anyone really uses that word. Do you guys know?
I have the feeling not. I think the second the finance minister is using it, that's when it is officially out of use among young people and anyone with any sort of street cred whatsoever.
So that's why we're talking about it right now. So you don't use it. Rachel, do you want to tell us any more cannabis-related vocabulary?
Yeah, so unlike Bubats, a really common word that is used probably both on the streets and an official context is kiffen, and that only means to smoke weed, unlike the word rauchen, which can be used for any kind of smoking, but usually just cigarettes. And it's kind of like toking up, but it's also, you know, more formal, and you'll see it in official headlines, contrary to Bubats, unless you're Christian Lindner. And, you know, to give you some examples, you could say wir kiffen zusammen, we're smoking a joint together. And Germans, by the way, also use the word joint just like in English.
And you do have the word kiffer as well as a noun. So if you want to describe someone who's a stoner, as we'd say in English, then they're a kiffer. So that's also a useful thing to do. And you can also kind of add it on to any type of stoner fashion, stoner vocabulary. Maybe Bubats would be kifferdeutsch. So have fun with it, basically.
Really good to know. And by the way, this is coming from three people who don't smoke cannabis at all. We've got no clue about... We've got little clue about anything.
No experience with the Bubats, unfortunately.
Yeah, despite coming from Northern California, I'm not a kiffa or kiffedin.
A film that has generated a lot of discussion, both at award ceremonies and among audiences, is The Zone of Interest. The film, which won Best International Picture at the Oscars this year, is based on Rudolf Höss, the commandant of Auschwitz concentration camp for a number of years during the Holocaust, and his wife Hedwig and their family. So it's by the director Jonathan Glazer and is inspired by the novel of the same name by Martin Amis. So just to give you a bit of an overview, if you haven't seen it, Rudolf Höss is an SS officer, and we see him in charge of the camp and how it operates. So he is deciding and implementing how to carry out the mass murder of mainly European Jews who were deported to Auschwitz in what is today Poland by the Nazis. So this film is just extremely chilling because Höss and his family live right next to the camp. They share a wall with it. It's a large home with what we see as the viewer, a gorgeous garden and a greenhouse and a little swimming pool. And you see the family having a generally nice time just playing around, going for picnics and ignoring the absolute horror of what is going on just over the wall. In my opinion, there there is an incredible use of sound in the film, because while you can't see any explicit violence directly from the house, you can hear it. So, Johnny, I know you saw the film recently. What did you think about it?
I completely agree with what you said, actually, about the sound. And that's why I think it's very important to see it in a cinema. And hopefully you get a nice audience like I did, people who, although it was quite full, it was very quiet, because you've got that low rumble throughout the entire thing, which is this constant reminder of what's happening on the other side of that wall, because you don't see those scenes that I think you're expecting to see. You don't see trainloads of people arrive. You don't see them pushed into a gas chamber. You don't see a lot of those dark things. And this is what I thought was so interesting about the movie, was like, it's a movie that requires prior reading, yet is still very effective. It can still win these awards. And I was thinking actually quite a lot about a graphic novel. A lot of people will know Maus. It's the kind of perfect companion, because that very much tells you what happened inside of it. Gives you the story of Vladik Spiegelman, told by his son. And yeah, he has a whole crazy story. We're not here to talk about Maus, but I it's a kind of perfect companion to it, in my opinion.
I've never heard of that. That really sounds interesting. I also thought of previous films, like Schindler's List is a really famous one, but there's been so many Holocaust films. And I feel like it kind of goes in hand in hand with those, if you know what I mean, because you've seen some of the really horrible violence in these films, and then you see this one where you don't see anything except glimpses of things.
Yeah, I was listening to another podcast about this, and they did say, you know, this isn't the film that you watch with no prior knowledge. This isn't the film that you show to the 16 or the 15-year-olds at school when they're starting their journey of coming to terms or learning about these horrific things. And I think it is interesting with the film that it does hold back. I think there is an element of frustration there. It's the watcher that so much is expected of you, and the narrative isn't really spun for you. And I think this kind of element of repression is so important there. You know, the subconscious almost sounds, the sounds of the violence, the blankness of the expressions, the banality of their family life, all of those kinds of things where you're not getting told what to think. It's not to say that the film is kind of morally ambivalent, because it isn't. I think we're very clear about the kind of morality of what goes on inside the walls of the concentration camp, or the death camp, as the case may be. But it's more that there's no sort of pantomime villainry. There's no, you know, the ultimate evil. There's banality, and there's repression, and there's a strange question of how can they live this life so close to what's going on the other side of those walls.
Yeah, it's, you're just like watching a family life. Like, you know, watching this quite normal guy. My partner, she said, like, it's just, this guy just felt like a bit like a robot. Like, he'd be doing this job. He'd be a good manager in a factory. He'd be a good whatever else. Like, that's, she wasn't trying to diminish, obviously, what was happening, but she was like, it was just, it was like this kind of emptiness of this person, I think. Less so his wife, Hedwig Hirst. She was quite intense. I couldn't watch her. I really hated her. The way that she was very frantic, the things that she was worried about were so unimportant compared to what was happening on the other side of the wall, and she just didn't care.
Yeah, and she was talking about the fact that they had kind of, they have a better life in this house. In the film, she obviously wants to stay in this house when her husband is transferred to another camp near Berlin. And she's kind of like, no, I want to stay here. Like, we built a good life. And I think that the class side of it also comes in a little bit, doesn't
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. When she says, which I think is very striking, there are two bits that kind of stand out. The moment where she's talking to her mother and she says, oh, well, you know, aesthetically, the wall's right there. Or we're thinking of putting vines on it and we don't want it, as if it's just a sort of, it's a bit uncouth. It's not quite fitting in with her decor ideals. And she says, oh, I've landed on my feet. Or her mum says that to her. And there are all of these bourgeois ideals coming through. Absolutely.
Yeah. And honestly, I actually felt sick when I left the cinema, to be honest, because it was so hard hitting and heavy. And, you know, the use of sound, the use of visuals, But it did make me feel quite nauseous. You obviously can't smell anything in the cinema, but I almost feel like that you can imagine how awful it smelled. And this is obviously like really horrible stuff, but I think that's what was so jarring as we're talking about with them going about their life, having a nice time, that Hedvig, the wife, is like so kind of happy to be there. And it's like, how can that be?
Mm. Yeah, you've reminded me of the part that hit me. They cut to Auschwitz today at a certain point, and I was there 15 years ago, but it cuts right to how the gas chamber looks now, which the big one, actually, where most people were killed, has not actually survived. So it cuts to the kind of original one, the smaller one. And I don't know, it just took me exactly back there. I was 19. Went there, and I remember just how shocking that was because, you know, I haven't always been this history nerd. I got into history in my 20s, actually. So the way Auschwitz hit me, it hit you how you would expect, right? How it's supposed to.
Yeah.
When you go to a place like this and you realize what humans are capable of. And yeah, to kind of evoke that feeling and that memory, I mean, it tells you how effective of a film this is, how important of a film it is, I think.
One thing I very much noticed when I moved to Germany was the remembrance culture here, known as Erinnerungskultur, this way of confronting the past crimes by the Nazis in different ways, such as all different kinds of memorials, museums, and even former concentration camp sites. Do you think Germany has kind of faced up to its historic responsibility quite well through this culture, Rachel? And do you think other countries could learn from this?
Yeah, Rach, that's a really big and also very important question. One of the things that struck me when I first came to Germany in 2008 is just how widespread the Erinnerungskultur is, and, you know, how at all museums, at all memorials, at all special sites devoted to victims of the Holocaust and talking about World War II in general, that Germany really faces up to the fact that they were the perpetrators, they did something wrong, they were the bad guys. And in other countries I've traveled to, I haven't really seen this level of, okay, we're going to take responsibility, whether it's, you know, the US maybe taking responsibility for slavery, or in the Balkans, countries taking responsibility for crimes, even if they acknowledge that they happened. And in Germany, it was just like very prevalent. This is something we did wrong. This is what we're doing to learn from it. And it made me feel safer to be in this country because, honestly, I thought I was just going to visit for 5 days in 2008 because, unfortunately, many of my family members were victims of the Holocaust. I have, not surprisingly, a Jewish background. And I felt like, you know, they had always down-talked the country. My great uncle refused to even step foot in Germany again. I even remember some relatives later on when I started learning German saying, why would you want to study that ugly language? And so they had a very poor impression of the country for historical reasons. But what struck me about Germany when I was actually there visiting was just, it's a country that wanted to embrace the present while learning from the past and not allowing it to happen again. And this is something that made me proud to live in present day Germany, despite what had happened in the past. And I don't think I would be able to say that for a lot of other countries had I had a similar background and similar things happening to my family or my relatives.
Really interesting. Thanks for that, Rachel. Johnny, I'm sure you get a lot of people requesting tours to learn about Germany's remembrance culture, maybe even visiting a concentration camp like Sachsenhausen near Berlin. How do you find people react to this?
Firstly, I think people don't know that that's kind of what they're asking for. It's not the term that I think tourists would use. Reason being is because of what you said, Rachel, is that other countries don't really do this. They don't look at their own history in that critical way. And that goes for other places that people have visited, right? But they certainly do know that they want to visit a place like Sachsenhausen or many of the memorials that are in the, basically they're all in a line near the Reichstag, right? Mm-hmm. And I think those things are super important because, yeah, you get to talk about very large victim groups being Sinti and Roma, homosexual victims of the Nazis, mentally and physically disabled victims of the Nazis at the T4 Memorial, and of course the memorial to the murdered Jews of Europe as well. I mean, I think sometimes people get a bit tired of me saying the word memorial on these tours, but you have in the center of Berlin these places where you can tell thousands and thousands, well, literally millions of stories of all of these people. And without those memorials, it wouldn't be as easy to just kind of pull this out of nowhere, because you can always go and look at a historic building or whatever, right? As for Sachsenhausen, it's a little bit different. With the memorials in the middle of town, like, you can kind of surprise people. Like, we're going to talk about this and it's going to be a bit rough for 10 or 15 minutes, but then we'll also leave this and we can crack jokes over there, or we can go for a coffee over there or whatever, right? Because you're in the middle of town. At Sachsenhausen, it's kind of all intense all the time and it hits everybody a little bit differently. It wouldn't be possible to be a guide and not be there with them. But I would wonder how they would approach these, how they would feel if they were there on their own when they see Arbeit macht frei for the first time in real life, right? On a gate there. It's not the original. It doesn't matter, right? Like, it's still there in place where it was, let's say. You know, I'll be there for 2 to 3 hours, which is not a huge amount of time. But every single thing that you're telling people is far worse than they'd imagined that it was. And it hits you in a different way when you're standing there. And there's an obvious responsibility to not tell people things for shock value, but to tell people things to say, you know, this is how bad it was, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've been a guide there since 2011, and it still feels like I don't know enough, and I still have this imposter syndrome. And I promise you, it's not false modesty, because the more you learn, the more you realize you don't know.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm still happy that I leave people with a better impression than when they left, hopefully a very good one. But yeah, it's an overwhelming task.
Yeah, I can imagine. And also, Johnny, I wanted to ask you, how do you build up all this knowledge about German history, Berlin history? It's obviously so rich and so different, so many different parts of German history. How do you do it?
Fortunately, history happens in a straight line. Because of that, one thing leads to the other. And I guess you remember the big events first, and then you kind of drill down and practice. And practice can be writing out a story, remembering a story. Storytelling is also a skill, right? I'm not saying I get all of these things right all the time. I think the unfair advantage I have in this room is that you've seen recorded videos of me, so I wouldn't release them if I didn't think they were okay. Whereas, you know, on the day, maybe a story that takes me 2 minutes on a video takes me 5 minutes in real life, because you're like, oh yeah, what was that? And then people will ask a question, and I love the kind of conversational element of it. But I've spoken to a few other guides about this, and especially with Sachsenhausen, you kind of remember what you say when you're in a place.
Yeah.
So I find my Sachsenhausen tour easy to remember when I'm there. And if you ask me to say, like, how do you tell that story now? And what about this? I'll be, and so, yeah, I don't know. There needs to be somebody who studies why we remember things better when we're stood in the place where we're supposed to.
Yeah.
But that's how it kind of works. And then last thing is, it's my hobby. I just keep doing it.
That makes sense. Thanks so much for your time today, Johnny. Can you let us know where people can find you?
Yes. So my name is Johnny Whitlam. And I think, honestly, if you stick that into Google, all this stuff comes up. So you can look for Johnny Whitlam or Whitlam's Berlin on Instagram, TikTok, Twitter. There you can also find my website, Whitlam's Berlin Tours. And if you go to your favorite podcast app and look for History Flakes, the Berlin History podcast, you can find the podcast I've made with my friend Pip. First episode's just come out. Second one's coming out soon. And I'm super excited.
Amazing. Right. We're definitely listening to that podcast. So that's it for this week. Thank you so much to all our listeners. As always, we will add the links in the show notes for the stories we've been talking about today. It would really mean a lot to us if you hit follow, left a rating or a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. This week's panelists have been Imogen Goodman and Rachel Stern, and our guest was Johnny Whitlam, and our sound engineer is Reese Edwards. I'm Rachel Loxton. We hope you enjoyed listening, and we'll be back again next week. Until then, take care.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.